kids, because obviously all of South Africa are pretty homogeneous ethnically.
Correct.
We just want to have at least a sentence in there about the other two populations.
So while you're on, why don't we move to a progress report from you and an update on question number 4.
It's done. We've you know, given the paper, you may have just got it. It is kind of large. I apologize for.
My email is kind of bad today, so it hasn't hit yet. But when I get home and have my Comcast, it will probably hit right away.
Okay.
So I'll look for it there. But go ahead.
Okay. So anyway, we've done the analyses with, I think most of you have already seen a draft of it before we realized we had some problems with IQ. Essentially what we did accidentally was one of my RAs downloaded some of scale scores for all of the kids. That's why it looked weird. So we fixed that, and the results are essentially the same in terms of interpretation. But anyway, we've got 99 kids from 3 different sites, including control and exposed at each of the sites. We've looked at total brain volume and subcortical structures, caudate, putamen, thalamus. And we've looked at within site group effects, which all look pretty consistent. So we're seeing the same pattern at all 3 sites, and that made us feel comfortable combining and then using site and age as a covariate. So highly significant reductions in basal ganglia and thalamic regions are observed between groups, and that's independent of overall brain volume. And there are significant correlations between Lepometer score and I think it's some basal ganglia structures. And there's a pretty robust correlation between total brain volume and quantity within just the 17 kids from South Africa who are exposed. And I've talked with Kathy, and she's reviewed it because we thought that would be important as well.
Elizabeth, this is Dale. So I'm not familiar enough with the Lepometer scale. Is it sensitive enough to pick up non FAS kids, or would that be synonymous with FAS?
Not necessarily synonymous. So the sample of kids with alcohol exposure from across all 3 sites range from full FAS to, A or D.
Mm-hmm.
So kids with a 5 on the Lepometer, which is, well, no, is 5 the worst? Let me see.
Let me answer it, Elizabeth. Dale, yeah, it gives you a nice dispersal between 1 and 5, 4 and 5 being values that are characteristic of a major FASD.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as you're comparing within groups, because there's substantial across group variation in that, as long as you're comparing controls and affected within group, it's very
That's what we're doing. Yeah, we're looking at within the exposed group correlations between Lepometer and the subregions of the brain that were best at distinguishing exposed from control.
Right.
Those graphs haven't changed since the version that I sent out to people.
So you're gonna send it out to us this weekend, or?
Yeah. So, I mean, again, my graduate student has done just a stellar job on writing the draft. Translate a few more things. We have to get ethnicity in there. But, I mean, I could send it now. I don't think much more than a couple of sentences on ethnicity.
I'm not going to read it this weekend, so she's fine with me, and make sure Colleen gets it then, too.
Oh, of course, yeah. So that's where we are with 4, I think.
That's great. And how are things going with enrollment?
for me?
Yes.
Good. I mean, we're still trying to pick up the ADHD. I think we've got three. So we're still working on that. And we're doing time two for the exposed and controlled scanning, but we don't have time two for the neurocognitive battery. I mean, we don't have money for that.
Yeah. Okay. Is Sarah on yet?
Not yet, but I think I hear her entering the building, so.
Oh, okay. We'll.
You want about, I can tell you about enrollment for neuropsych at my three sites.
Yeah, if you could, that would be great.
Well, total three sites now, we're up to, we have 113 with the full battery with FAS, FASD. We have almost an equal number of controls, 106. We're up to 22 ADHD, 33 low IQ for a total. We've done 281 between my three sites. New Mexico is coming up. We're up to 45 in New Mexico for FASD, and we've got a very big recruitment campaign on that deals with the fact that UNMH has blocked all of our FAS referrals. But I think through parent groups and a couple of advocacy groups like that, we're going to do okay in the next 6 weeks with FAS cases.
Good. Is 6 weeks how long you expect to continue the recruitment until you're done, or is that just your estimate for the next 6 weeks?
Well, Ed's got us on a short leash. He's basically saying he's going to take a month-by-month look at it.
Right.
Our ability to recruit FAS. And my counter is that it doesn't cost us anything to keep recruiting in New Mexico.
How many have you recruited in the last month, Phil, in New Mexico?
Last month, just four last month. The previous month before that, it was, let's see, 8 or 10.
Mm-hmm.
So 15 in the last 2 months.
Yep.
So it's picked up. And ADHD is where we really have made a lot of progress in New Mexico. And so now we're just turning our sights to FAS a little more as we have six more scheduled for the next 2 weeks, most of them ADHD. So it's coming along.
Good. So let's see. Is Claire on? I don't think so. And Northern Plains, you've sort of updated us.
Northern Plains, we have a total of 75 kids. It's well-balanced between 36 FAS, PFAS, and 31 controls with eight ADHD, and we can get that ADHD up in another trip or so. We also are going to be able to expand our FAS sample in the Plains over the next 6 months to a year for two reasons. One, we're working real closely with one of Gene's dysmorphology clinics in the western portion of the state, and he's got 44 additional kids diagnosed over there in Rapid City, and we're going to start picking those off. And plus we're starting our in-school studies in November 15th. We start our dysmorphology screens there.
Great. South Africa.
South Africa is doing great. 73 FAS, 50 control, 32 low IQ, and we're not recruiting ADHD there for a total of 100 and some unknowns, a total of 161 kids. And they're all really great cases, those 73.
Great. Someone had a question. I didn't quite hear who.
Yeah, it's Sarah. I just wanted to mention, Phil, did you see that we're hoping we can provide you with the remaining ERA funds to do that extra clinic?
No.
It just went from Carolyn probably to Marita in the last few days that we thought the funding year ended, well, it did, and June 30th, but we're being allowed to continue the funding.
Well, that's neat.
Yeah. So I don't know how much there was, but I know you had a little bit extra.
Yeah, it's. I think we've got about 17,000, maybe.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, it's good. No, I didn't see that. I just got in 15 minutes ago from Sioux Falls.
It was probably this week sometime, but I don't know exactly when.
Okay.
Great. That's it, Michael. Thank you.
Okay. Sarah, could you update us on your stuff and on your two questions, questions 2 and 5?
Sure. Let's see. We've been testing quite a bit here in San Diego. We've had a lot of summer as I was really busy for us. We've also been working in relation to the two questions. The biggest thing we're doing is trying to figure out how to handle the missing data. And one of the things, I'm sorry I was late onto the call, so I don't know if this has been mentioned, but we've been working with informatics in trying to figure out a way to make a report of where missing data exists so that it can be fixed. You know, we recognize that sometimes there will be sometimes there really is missing data, and you know, we'll handle that. But there are places that we know that data exists but haven't been uploaded yet. So we're working with, and I think they're waiting on us now. But Michelle had generated a way to make a report similar to, you know, how many kids are in the database, but it would be more extensive because it would show, you know, where data were missing, and we can provide that information so that the sites can upload the missing data. So that's our biggest thing. And then we had Ken Jones here twice since the last call, and I don't think he's on the call today because he's in Korea, but he was able to increase the number of FAS cases between Los Angeles and San Diego.
By how many?
I think he might be up to 8.
Total?
Yeah. It was 4. It was 4, so it's 100% increase.
But are they scanned?
These were kids that had were supposed to have data in every domain.
Okay.
But I think he was trying to get in touch with you, Elizabeth, about some details. I just know that because he was here for clinic and we talked about it and we did a couple searches to see what kids were available.
Right.
So you're up to 8 now? Is that right? Or he is up to 8?
Yes.
And what's the target? I've forgotten on that.
He said 10. He would have been happy with 10.
Okay, that's good.
So we're working on, you know, changing the data and making kids. I'm just kidding.
Turning them into
effort. Kidding.
Write that for the record.
It's not in the record. How about that?
Another thing relevant to that is that this is on the agenda. Can I talk about it now?
Sure.
So on last Thursday, we got an email from NIAAA asking about if we remembered the supplement, ARRA supplement we sent a year and a half ago. And turns out they might have some money to share, only about $50,000, I mean, if they decide to give it to us. So we made a group decision to try to use it to get maybe 10 of Claire's FAS kids, the full-blown FAS, and we'll have to find some money from elsewhere to do some controls at her site. So if we get the money, we can actually boost that number a little bit more by pulling in some of Claire's kids.
Yep. That's great.
Because they already have 3D and DNA and neurobehavior.
Yes.
So there's just the brain part that was missing on that.
Yep.
Sarah, do you want to continue to update, tell us about your recruitment goals and numbers and where things stand?
Sure. Let me just look at this. Okay. So we, as I said, we've been testing like crazy over the last few months. I don't know exactly how many we've increased, but I want to say, 10 this month maybe, and the data are in the central repository, and we've also been working heavily on the demographic database, which I want to put a plug in to make sure that everybody's also entering demographic data, because the neurobehavior data is much less useful without that other information, and really just trying to get the database in shape so we can add, you know, what the data that we analyzed for the RSA symposium was limited by all these missing data. And so we're really working hard on trying to get more data than we had at that point.
Okay, I want to just take a sidebar on the RSA symposium. On the basic science call, we talked a little bit further about the value of a communication, given that most of the data presented were preliminary and unpublished.
Mm-hmm.
And there was some feeling that this might not be useful, but we should. We wanted to get both your input as well as Elizabeth's about how much of the data you have would be published in the next 4 months and could be included, and whether it's worth waiting for something.
You know, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm happy to engage in a more extensive conversation, but I think my philosophy is we could do something that's preliminary, which doesn't interfere with a larger study. It, you know, it goes with the goal of trying to get something out from all of our sites, which we might not be able to do individually with such preliminary data, but we could as a group. So we're very, very preliminary, if that makes any sense, because it's, because we're saying this is sort of where we are now, and then hopefully in the next few months we'll have more data to put into the to a larger study of each domain. That's just a thought.
And Elizabeth, what are your thoughts?
Well, for the stuff that I talked about earlier, I mean, I think we'd be ready to submit it pending comments from all the relevant investigators, I mean, within a month. I mean, again, we don't know where yet. But this is not really preliminary.
Okay. So it might be that we have to fudge a little bit on other presentations, but maybe I'll get back to them and see if they can scrounge something together that would go into this, and we'll maybe continue the discussion offline about what might not be in that.
Sounds good.
This is Dale. I've got very limited experience with having published just one mini review in ACER, and I'm a little foggy on the details, but I somehow have the thought that maybe they discouraged publishing, that they wanted these to have kind of a critical review feel, and discouraged publishing things that were or writing one that contained unpublished data. Does that make sense to anyone, or am I making that up?
I don't know if that's true or not, but we did publish a conference symposium summary. It was a number of years ago, but it was very well cited because it's one of the only papers or one of the first papers to discuss a neurobehavioral profile. So I know at least we cite it every time we talk about that. But there really wasn't a lot of – honestly, there wasn't a lot of data in it.
Yeah.
I mean, I could send it around, but it was definitely a sort of summary of a lot of, different projects.
So somehow,
but that was a few years ago.
Yeah, I got the impression that maybe they've had a shift in philosophy. So it might
they have. They have had that shift.
Okay.
They do want, and so you know, so Jan Hoke is supposed to be drumming up that caliber of review rather than conference proceedings.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So in view of that, what are your feelings about submitting something?
Well, if Elizabeth's work is ready to go on its own, then you take that out of what. And I apologize, I wasn't at the meeting this year, so I don't know what else you had at the conference.
So it was Rajesh Miranda presented some of his microRNA as potential marker, and then Feng Zhou did his animal 3D face. And then Sarah and Elizabeth presented on neurobehavior and brain imaging, respectively.
Okay. And I thought that Fong was fairly close to getting ready to publish that on his own anyway. So I was in on both calls, and that's why I think I'm still suggesting. I'm not sure if it's worth the effort if these papers are close enough to being published on their own anyway. So that didn't go anywhere.
Elizabeth,
I'm not adamant about this. Just my suggestion. That's all.
Well, it is helpful to have your input, though. I mean, John, you have obviously expertise in, from the editorial side, and we don't want to put in a paper that they're going to we don't want to put the effort into writing a paper that they're going to turn around and say, this isn't what we want.
Yeah.
And who may get that? You know, from Acer. I mean, if you wanted to go someplace else. I mean.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, this is Jill. I just got an email from Leah that Tatiana has to leave the call soon, so if we want an update from her, we should ask for it now. I didn't want to interrupt. I'm sorry.
No, that's good. Tatiana, could you update us, please?
I sure can. So so if you're looking at the report, so in terms of imaging, and, you know, San Diego can speak for itself. I mean, they're well above where their targets are for their imaging, similarly for Los Angeles. Atlanta, I know we need to get a visit. We're waiting for them to get a bolus of kids. That number will jump up because we typically will see 20 to 30 kids. So a single site visit will really jump that number. But to my knowledge, and Leah can correct me, we do not have that scheduled yet. That always gets timed with Ken's visit. And we've encouraged it, but we've not heard that there is one yet. Do you know one, Leah?
No.
We spoke. Yeah, I didn't think there was either. And then I wanted to just talk about the Ukraine briefly. So if you look at our numbers, and this is partly, we've emailed with Tina, but I guess I a bit want to get the blessing of everyone else as well. So we did a first collection of images out of the Ukraine. They came back. You know, we had the whole issue with computers and stuff, but they've come back. We processed them, and the quality of them was really substantially lower than they were at other sites. And this is not to discuss blame. It's partly the age of the kids. It's perhaps we did do training, but you know, it for whatever many reasons, we kind of talked back and forth with Tina about whether or not to bring the camera back. And the way the kids were going to be seen, it would have involved having the camera there for probably at least a six-month period. And the number of kids was not going to be that large. And we were really concerned whether or not we could significantly improve the quality of the images we were going to get. So we actually told Tina we did not think we would send the camera back. And part of the reason for that is Ed appears, at least through emails, to have identified a group of kids or a potential collection of kids that would have a higher rate of FAS. I think he's trying to coordinate getting Ken there as well. And I think if we were going to have the opportunity to see a larger number of kids and a larger number with FAS, where we would be in control of getting good quality images, we felt that that would be a better use of that camera than to send it back to the Ukraine and potentially not get images of good quality. And I guess I'm partly looking for blessing. I wanted everyone to know that we've been having that discussion, and that was sort of where we are right now and the way we've left things with Tina.
Tatiana, where was Ed's cohort?
Trying to remember, Lee. I was just pulling up the email trying to remember. Is it?
Is it Poland, maybe?
No, it's U.S. Wasn't it U.S.?
It was in the U.S., somewhere in the plains.
I want to say North Dakota.
Dakota, yes. North
would that, it's Phil May. Would you know, I don't know, I wonder if I could pull it up. Would you know, did you talk with him at all about the cohort?
Did I? No.
Yeah.
Maybe it's with Larry Bird up in North Dakota.
Well, I've talked with Larry in the past, and that's why I'm trying to, I am so sorry. I was thinking that Ed would be on the call and that I would just be able to defer with him, and I didn't realize he wasn't going to be on. I apologize. I can send it out afterward. I'll send it to Jill so it can go in minutes. But I had the impression we've already committed that we would get the camera, we'll get Leah there. So, I mean, if we can get access, that we will absolutely go after that group.
I
wanted to walk you through where else we have collection going or potentially going. We've also, as you know, have a potential with PASS. We're still waiting to hear what's going to happen with that. That would be a large number of infants. It would be two time points, 1 month and 12 months. If you're looking at the reports, it shows the Jacobson South Africa sample, which is static. I mean, that sample's not going anywhere in terms of increasing. So that's kind of where we have collection right now. In terms of analysis, Peter Hammond has all of the images that have been collected to date. His biggest problem with the U.S. samples is that the number of FAS is too small for the kinds of analyses he does. And so we've talked about shifting that more toward an alcohol exposure, non-alcohol exposure model. I think he prefers to start with FAS, which is why he's actually done most of his initial work in the South Africa sample, and some of you, we talked about this on a previous call. There was a question of whether or not we were seeing gender differences or whether or not there might be, by chance, differential alcohol exposure by gender of the child. And it actually turned out that what looked like it might be actual gender differences in terms of some shape actually was a differential in the amount of alcohol exposure the mother had given the child in utero, which I thought was fascinating that he was able to pull that out and was able to identify that. So he's really interested in it, is in the process of doing additional analyses. He calls them single subject analyses as compared to group analyses. They're a little bit less powerful, but allows him to look at more subtle differences. In the process of doing that, I have not heard the results of those. Tried to get a call set up with him, and I apologize that I don't have an update on that. From our end, we've actually been doing some work in the South Africa sample just because the larger numbers of FAS, so we started our analyses in there. And I'm glad to talk about that a little bit more if people want to talk about that. Our idea.
Go ahead.
But our idea is to do some of our, you know, we've been doing more modeling in that group because the numbers are larger, and then try to see if we can do basically almost like a replication going in the U.S. samples if we can get those numbers of FAS increased. That's, I think, pretty much where we are. Did I forget anything, Leah?
I don't think so.
Okay.
And
I've got a question, Michael, if I may.
Yes, please.
I'm looking at the Google charts, Tatiana.
Sure.
And I see the Jacobson and then the May Adams South Africa sites differentiated.
Oh, that's correct. So, would you like me to explain why, Dale?
Yeah, for the Jacobson, all I saw was a red line, but I'm seeing a note there that says the lines are merged.
Okay, so let me explain that to you. So when we wrote the grant, the sample we talked about in South Africa is actually the sample on the right, the May Adams sample. But what we actually ended up doing was collecting the left sample with the Jacobsons. And the reason the actual and target are merged is because that sample collection is closed. That was the supplement that we received. We've already gone. We've imaged all those kids. That collection's finished. So we imaged them 4 years ago, and we imaged them again.
I see. So it's targeted.
So there's not a plan at this time to go back and re-image them again during this current grant period. So in essence, we've hit target on those because the target – these were the targets that were in that supplement, and this is what we finished that collection, unless we were to decide to go back there again.
Okay, thanks.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. And I apologize. Maybe there's a better way that we could show that. We haven't gotten there. Okay.
And any other follow-up on question three?
Is question three, remind me of question three, I'm sorry.
Applying dysmorphology algorithm for diagnosing FAS to the 3D facial imaging data. Goal is to determine if 3D data can be used to diagnose FASD and similar.
Okay. So we've talked about this a bit on previous calls. So what we literally did is took measurements taken from the 3D camera and applied the algorithm that's employed by the dysmorphologist to see if we would come up with the same classification. And so this led to a lot of the discussion we've had about chart being used, measurements, which standards are being used. And the reason it came to that is because we typically run in terms of correct classification when we use the algorithm applied to camera data. It typically runs about, I want to say about, would you say about 60%? Would you say that's about right, Leah? For FAS, a little bit better for controls.
But
part of the reason I will say it looks so bad is in the U.S., if you're trying to say, can you make the diagnosis of FAS, the numbers are pretty small. So if you can't get all of them, your numbers will look bad. And so that led us to go back and gyrate on each individual case and why there was a discrepancy, which led to the whole question about what chart people were using. And that's probably a topic for another call. In terms of the South Africa sample, we've actually done the same exercise, and the biggest difference we see and is that when you look at Filtrum and Vermilion, when we take it off the camera, we've actually sat with Ken and gone back and forth. We're usually within about one, so three versus a four versus a three, but that's enough to change your classification. So we're often just off, like if it's FAS by the dysmorphologist, we'll be deferred or vice versa, but we cannot get that rate up to where we can actually get it, which is in the 80% range, when we actually do measurements and use something like a logistic and come up with our own algorithm. So we cannot get it as good applying the dysmorphologist diagnosis to the camera. And that, I think that is I don't think that's going to change. That's my opinion.
Okay, that's great. And there was a discussion on email that Elizabeth initiated about candidate genes, and
yes.
I wonder if you have a moment just to comment on that.
Absolutely. So where we've got, so the question, and of course, Elizabeth, this is sort of a joint conversation between both of us. So we have saliva that's been collected and from the U.S. sites, so in San Diego, in Los Angeles, in Atlanta, and also we collected blood in South Africa with the Jacobsons. The key in terms of Elizabeth is who also has neuroimaging. Not 3D imaging, but neuroimaging. And so there we have San Diego and Los Angeles. And that's where, in my opinion, Elizabeth's news about potentially getting imaging in Atlanta is really exciting because we already have saliva on there, and the ability to get more images would, I think, substantially increase the power of what we could potentially do. So there's so this is really Elizabeth's work. So she has – do you want to talk about what
I don't know how to talk about that, Tam.
Oh, okay, so let me go through. So there's been this whole discussion about what would be potentially candidate genes that could be looked at. And so part of the discussion is, you know, sample sizes. And, you know, so, you know, I live in the world of GWAS where you do thousands of people, but when you go and really look at the imaging literature, I mean, I think it's very, I mean, Elizabeth does much more than I do, but having samples of 30, 40, 50, 60 is very typical, I think, in that kind of field if you want to do candidate gene studies, a potential functional polymorphism that has a reasonable frequency that you can find enough individuals with different genotypes that you could actually ask, are there differences, in our case, between groups, for example, and their, for example, now I'm going to show my ignorance, perhaps it's volumes.
I can talk about that part. I thought you meant the actual genes that we may be.
So the key thing is, so what was circulated around was a list of what would be good candidate genes. And so we have the DNA is already extracted out of the saliva. So one of the things that could be done is we could do something like a sequenome array, or we could do some kind of a multiplex, assay or assays, where if we wanted to come up with a series, I would propose functional variants that we want to examine in a series of genes. I think the question is, how much evidence do we want to use and what kind of evidence to pick the genes that we put as our priority on that array? And so we've had a lot of different comments on that. And so I was trying to envision in my own mind how you would craft this in terms of a paper. And so I think it almost would be tied to what phenotype you want to look at. And I could imagine papers that were tied to this phenotype with this gene. And I don't know if that's what you're thinking about, Elizabeth, too.
Well, I guess what I was thinking was once we find genes that we think might tell us something about brain development, to look for genotypes by diagnosis interactions in predicting brain volumes that are good at differentiating kids with FAS kids with FASD from kids without. That was what I was thinking.
Okay.
Is that consistent with what you were talking about in terms of what we could do?
No, I think so. I mean, what I would actually – what we've got is we've got actually a list of potential genes that have all been nominated. I think what we want to do is just kind of lay out what's the actual SNP that we might potentially want to do in there. And
Or more than one? Or are we? Do we have to just make the best?
No, I guess the only reason I'm not suggesting to do a large number is because of multiple testing and the sample size.
Oh, yeah. But I mean,
that's my biggest concern. So when we do traditional SNP studies with thousands of people, we cover the gene, you know, get all the LD covered. I'm nervous about the ability to do that in a sample this size. I guess I missed, when you were talking about Atlanta, how many subjects do you think you could get?
Well, if we get the money, it would only be about 60,000 direct if we get the money. So what we did was, because it was me that was the PI, we essentially just shifted all the money over into a subcontract to Claire.
Okay.
And there were rules for the ERA funding that kind of got us screwed up. One is that we had to have in it a 0.5 FTE for one individual.
Okay.
And that took up about, you know, half the money. So we only have enough money, if we get it, to study 10 kids.
Oh.
And we're going to target the kids with full-blown FAS.
Yep.
And we're hoping that Ed might give us a few thousand more out of his magic hat to do some controls.
Does it matter that we already have people in Atlanta paid 0.5 FT?
No.
No, because area, you're creating jobs.
It doesn't matter. We've got it all worked out. I mean, this was like a... If we get it, we.
Okay.
So I mean, still, that would increase.
No. I'm in no way. I mean, I think we really want more full-blown FAS. I mean, I think it'd be wonderful to get that in an imaging environment. I mean, you better than me, you know that.
Oh yeah. I mean, I think it's great.
It would be really good. And I guess I'm not inherently worried. I mean, this is your field, but is it a problem if the controls are done in a different site? I mean, is there a concern about machines or about?
Yeah, we would not want to look at, you know, a huge group of FAS kids scanned on one scanner and compare them to another. It would be hard to justify. So,
okay.
I mean, we don't have to have an equal number of controls. I mean, we don't at really any of our sites, but we have to have enough to say, okay, within site, we see similar effects, you know, group effects within site.
Okay.
So.
Okay.
I've got a pretty simplistic question about the genetics. Are you talking about looking for vulnerability genes? And very simplistically, are we talking about comparing kids that appear to have similar exposure histories but different outcomes, different phenotypes?
No, you're actually asking a good question. I think we're probably going to both end up answering your question. This was actually where we started when we first did our first call. So I think the question really is, it really comes down to what is your question? So when we first started making the list, I mean, you could consider genes that are involved, for example, in alcohol metabolism. That could be really important in terms of metabolism of the infant and how that would have affected outcome. You could also imagine, and with some of the genes that are on the list, are genes that have already been associated, for example, with brain development or with ADHD or a couple other phenotypes that have been shown to already have differences in brain imaging studies. And now the question is, what happens when you overlay that to the alcohol exposure, non-alcohol exposure? Is there basically an interaction?
Right. So does the same genotype exert the same effect whether or not you have exposure? Is there something about having exposure that makes that gene do something bad, right, Tatiana, something
exactly.
like that?
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, we actually struggled with this. So you're not asking a naive question at all. We struggled when we first started talking about, you know, because you're actually talking about an interaction model. It actually is I don't want to say super complex, but it is that's where the sample size issue, you know, we wanted to play with it a little bit. And, you know, Elizabeth does a lot more interaction models and felt comfortable, you know, with the sample size. But I think having 10 more full-blown FAS in a sample of this size is going to make a difference.
I agree.
So we had the genes that we had nominated were in the category that's just been queried, which is susceptibility genes, because we have shown differences at least in levels of activity of the gene products between animals that are susceptible and not. And it kind of is a natural step to take from there. Because we've shown that at least one of those genes determines the susceptibility of L1, the protein that we study, to effects of ethanol. But there are other ways to look at the same populations. Ultimately, to reproduce what we did in animals, in humans, you would want to know about people who had similar exposures but different outcomes, because that would determine or at least provide a link between polymorphisms that might be important in changing activity of these signaling molecules and their effects on development.
But see, the hard part about that is you know, if you're talking about quantity of exposure, that's a tough one when you get to our people.
Well, we've got it in South Africa.
Yes, true, but
we don't have DNA.
Right, and we don't have enough if we were to just use South Africa.
So you're saying, Elizabeth, that there's not a large enough sample of people who have had similar exposure but different outcomes?
No, we just don't know what the level of exposure is for most of our
kids.
U.S. samples.
Yeah.
So that, you know, is there any other way to link your work with, because, I mean, I think it would be a great place to hang our hat if there was some sort of gene variant that you've already seen in animals that we could target, but it has to be a common variant, right,
Well, the issue is, so if you want to have enough individuals in different samples, so remember you're thinking now about genotype, alcohol exposure, not alcohol exposure, so you've already parceled out this sample. So when we were talking about, when we think about variants, we usually do in the context of minor allele frequency. I wouldn't want to do anything that didn't have a minor allele frequency of at least 30%.
I agree.
I would be nervous that we wouldn't have any power.
Yeah.
That's a ballpark. I can run formal power calculations, but I feel pretty comfortable saying that.
So
30%, if you had 60 kids, 20 in one group and 40 in the other,
right,
that would be good enough for mm-hmm. effects in brain. But then we're talking about both controls and FAS, and we don't,
So is the message that we and others who nominated genes need to go back and identify allele frequencies if they're known?
No, I think that's fine if you leave us to do that. If you know it, that's great. But, I feel comfortable. What I was going to do, because I think that's how I can help Elizabeth, is I was going to make sure I knew I may come back and ask you that, what the functional variant that's in the literature, and I was just going to go look whether HapMap or dbSNP and look at what kind of frequencies they have, and that should certainly be representative of most of the, the U.S., which is where we're going to be doing this. If I can, I'll get it separately for African Americans and Hispanics. That's the other red herring in this whole thing is this is also on top of everything else an ethnically diverse sample.
So I guess what I was thinking, because I have a new postdoctoral fellow who's really interested in leading from the brain part, leading it with Tatiana for the genes. But if we could come up with, and now Tatiana, did you get my list?
I'm looking at it right now while we're talking.
I didn't send it to anyone but the two of you. We could forward it. I don't know.
Yeah, anyway. I think what you wanted, so what I think the homework that's still needed is what the functional variants are. This requires a little bit of digging into the literature, but
Yaling can do that. It's just I don't want her to have to do it for 57 genes.
So for the people who nominate, if there's a paper that they can tie to it, that would probably help a lot.
Okay.
How about that? That's what I would suggest. Or if it's obvious, I can go and we'll go find the paper.
Well, or I can have Yaling do it because she's interested.
Yeah, we can figure that out after the call. But, yes,
okay.
I would like to really move this forward. We've got the DNAs. I think it's a really great use of these DNAs, and I really would like to have some papers using the DNA before the grant has to go back in again.
And Tatiana, I would also say, it could be if we get the money, big if, to do some of Claire's kids, I think we should move forward with what we have.
Oh, I do too. I think we have enough to start some preliminary data.
Yes.
Absolutely.
And if it's looking interesting,
I think
and we know we're within 6 months of getting, more kids, then we can, sort of gauge whether it's wait for the rest or...
I agree. I think this is really a very doable thing. And I actually, honestly, depending on how you're framing the hypothesis, see multiple papers. You would do them as just a couple assays all bundled together, but you'd package them differently as papers. That's my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Should there be an offline discussion with maybe Elizabeth, Tatiana, and me and anyone else that you want to consider?
Sure. Be happy to.
Really? Yeah.
Okay. We'll try to set that up. Jill, are you still on?
Always.
Okay, great. So we want to set up a meeting with Tatiana, Elizabeth, and me and any others who want to be part of this, just to talk about how to move forward with the genetic studies.
I'll have Leah with me.
Kathy Sulik made some suggestions, too.
Yes, that's true. So we'll include Kathy Sulik.
Yeah. Okay, and anybody else? Sarah, you've been involved in it's your subjects that are also being imaged. So I think anyone who wants, it's meant to be an open...
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. I'd be happy to be there.
Okay.
One thing I wanted to interject, Michael, if I may.
Yes.
So, and some of you may be more knowledgeable about this than me, but there's a NIAAA chip, which I understand is a SNP chip that has representation of metabolic alcohol metabolic genes and neurotransmitter system genes. I don't know if they go into the sorts of neurodevelopmental genes you're thinking of.
That was my hesitation. I actually thought about that too, Dale. So when we had more of a final list, I was actually going to compare it back.
Yeah.
Because you're right. That is certainly one way to go. I think it's got a lot of other stuff that we're probably not as interested in. But if that were to be the more cost-effective way to do it, that's absolutely what I would do.
Okay, good.
Absolutely. And I mean, I know David, so
I'm not telling it. Just.
Oh, no, no, no. And I know David. Are you kidding? I mean, David always pushes it, so he's shameless.
So does anyone happen to know if it has signal transduction genes?
See, I think it's more focused on, like, serotonin. It's got all the dopamine transporters. It's got the ADHs, the ALDHs. It's got, it's got the GABAs are on there. It's more. That's my recollection. I'd have to go look at the full gamut of what's on there.
It sounds more of an addiction gene.
It is. He actually calls it an addiction chip, is what he calls it. It's got the opioids and all that on it. Isn't that right, Dale? I mean, that's certainly what I've heard him call
that's
it.
That's my understanding. Is that
yeah, it's very addiction oriented. So that's why, to my mind, when we first started talking about this, I didn't think it was necessarily quite the right set of SNPs for us. But I'm always glad to revisit it if it was a more effective way to do it.
We'll have to look it up, because the MAP kinase genes have been implicated in addiction as well.
Yep.
So
is this going to cost money that we don't have to do the gene part?
I will speak up, and Dale, you tell me if you disagree with me. But since we were supplemented to get get the DNA, I would propose that I would look for money to be able to do a modest number of SNPs. So what I was originally thinking of was something like a sequenome, where you could put like 30 SNPs together, and it'd probably be like one run or two runs. And I think we could afford that within what we have in this grant. I mean, would you – it's a slight change what we do. I mean, I may have to ask you permission, but wouldn't you think that would be very appropriate, Dale?
Yeah, I guess it's just a matter of the timing. I don't think I was around at the time when the decision was made to collect the DNA, but whether it was for a rainy day or whether it was
– We actually didn't propose in the supplements 2 years ago. We actually did not propose any specific studies other than to extract the DNA.
Yeah, yeah.
But to my mind, I mean, I just think that's a very logical thing to do.
The DNA – idea came up as not wanting to lose an opportunity to ask questions that we couldn't conceptualize at the time. And to have this, since so much effort was going into collecting samples and characterizing patient populations.
Right.
So it really was kind of an open-ended, we wouldn't want to lose out on this, because when will this ever happen again?
Right, right. And so I think when you feel you're at the right point in time to formulate those questions and answer them, and then that's the time to ask and put together a request.
Okay.
Bounce it off Ken at some opportune moment and at least get him thinking about it.
Okay.
And you know, I'll mention it.
So we're sort of nearing time to wrap up. Are there any people on whom we have not asked for updates or who have come on since the call started? And are there any other topics that people want to bring up at this point? If not,
have a great weekend.
Have a great weekend and see you in a month.
All right.
Okay.
Bye.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.